The headlines: Iran's leader says some hostilities towards the Islamic Republic are due to the nature of its political system. Israel launches airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip amid heightened tensions following the regime's deadly raid on the occupied West Bank. And China says its strategic partnership with Russia has grown mature, resilient, and stable through complex and grave situations. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the main reason behind enmities towards the Islamic Republic is the nature of the system, which is a religious democracy. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Islamic Republic combines democracy, freedom, and religion, and this is a mix that foils the designs by the leaders of liberal democracy to plunder global resources. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader hailed the huge turnout of people in nationwide demonstrations marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. He said the annual event is a manifestation of the strong popular support for the Islamic Republic. Ayatollah Khamenei called for more efforts to boost hopes for future among the people. He said that Iran's adversaries are pulling out all the stops to strike despair into the hearts of the Iranian nation. Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus has sparked a new wave of escalation. Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip have retaliated by firing rockets and pledged that the resistance front will not back down against the Israeli occupation.
Tensions are flaring up again across the Palestinian territories as the Israeli regime has intensified its bloody crackdown there. After a day of mayhem and bloodshed in the West Bank by the regime's forces, Israeli warplanes rained down missiles on the besieged Gaza Strip, prompting Palestinians to hit back with rockets. Wednesday's Israeli raid on West Bank was the deadliest in about two decades. Nearly a dozen people were killed and scores more were injured after the regime's forces, backed by armored vehicles, surrounded the city of Nablus and opened fire on the people, including teenagers and elderly. Thousands of Palestinians gathered to mourn the death of their loved ones. Nablus and the nearby city of Jenin have repeatedly come under Israeli attacks over the last couple of months. Palestinians find themselves helpless in front of the occupying regime and its ruthless agenda.
What is happening on the ground is organized state terrorism, which the Israeli occupation government is solely responsible for. The international silence regarding these crimes is an encouragement for the occupation.
Many believe that the inaction of the UN and other international bodies, as well as unwavering support of certain governments for Israel, emboldens the regime to go ahead with its crimes against Palestinians.
The international community supports Israel. There are governments like the United States and the United Arab Emirates that are supporting and funding the Israeli occupation to do the horrific things that they are doing to our people. It is rather sick. We consider them partners in crime, basically. Now, why do they do it? They do it very simply because there's a very strong Zionist lobby around the world that promises them various things, especially keeping their regimes in power.
In doing Israeli crimes over the past several decades, Palestinians have realized that they cannot expect more than condemnation of Israel from the international community.
The right response to Israel is the activation of resistance across the occupied territories and retaliatory attacks against the regime's forces and settlers.
The Israeli regime has piled up pressure on Palestinians with deadly crackdown, illegal detention, and demolition of their homes. Years of crippling siege of the Gaza Strip is yet another example how the regime has turned the Palestinian territory into an open prison. The people in Gaza and the West Bank have been living in fear and agony as they lose their loved ones almost on a daily basis. But Israel's Western and regional backers keep watching the regime's bloodshed silently.
Earlier, we talked to political commentator Laith Maruf. He explained how the West keeps helping Israel get away with crimes against the Palestinians.
They will continue to get away with it because we have a stalemate at the Security Council where the Americans and the French and the British continue to veto any real action against the state of Israel. And what that means is that everybody has to remember that international law is not de jure, it's not what's written and what's in courts. It is de facto. It's what can you bring through brute force into fact. And the Palestinians and any country and any people that want to be sovereign must bring that sovereignty through brute force. And so ultimately, there will be no liberation of Palestine through groveling at the feet of the West or the Security Council. As we saw, this statement that came out was even a compromise of a withdrawal by the United Arab Emirates of a motion that was supposed to come to the Security Council for a condemnation. So now we have just a statement that is nothing, that's ink on paper. So we have to look at the ground in Palestine. The resistance has clearly chosen to delay any response, as we see right now. But maybe this window of delay, hoping for the collapse of Israel internally, is going to close through force by the Zionists.
Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, says a general strike has been declared across the occupied West Bank following the Israeli regime's bloodshed there.
Today, a general strike has been declared across the occupied West Bank with no schools, no transportation as well, to express Palestinians' anger over the Israeli crimes that had been committed and continue to be committed by the Israeli forces against the Palestinians. The different Palestinian resistance groups have slammed the Israeli crimes and the killing of 11 Palestinians in Nablus and vowed that they would respond and that Palestinians will always be adherent to their choice of resistance, because in response to the these Israeli massacres and Israeli aggression, Palestinians have nothing but to respond, and anything that would happen would be a natural response to the pain, to the crimes being committed by the Israeli forces.
Iran's foreign minister has strongly condemned the Israeli massacre of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus.
The Zionist regime is facing multifaceted crises from within, and Netanyahu's cabinet is falling apart. Israel has resorted to bloodshed to cover up these crises, but what was witnessed in Nablus proved that resistance is not limited to Gaza alone. The entire West Bank has now turned into an epicenter of resistance against the occupying regime.
Amir Abdullahian's remarks came as condemnations are pouring in over the Israeli bloodshed of the Palestinians. Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, says the cruel targeting of civilians confirms that the occupying regime can only be deterred by the weapon of resistance fighters. In a message, Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtayyeh branded the Nablus carnage as the Israeli regime's systematic terrorism. Separately, resistance movement Hamas denounced the extrajudicial killing of Palestinians, saying that retaliatory attacks would be only the right response to Israel. Palestinian activist and journalist Wafa al-Udaini gave us her perspective on the deadly Israeli incursion into the occupied West Bank.
What is happening in Nablus is a genocide, and the Israeli occupation is acting in a way, this brutality, because they are aided by the whole world, and indeed they mean to crack down the resistance in the occupied West Bank. But they think that by acting this way, they are uprooting the resistance. But indeed, the resistance is deep in our heart, in Palestinian heart, because not because we like to kill the people and so on. No, because we are being subject to daily oppression by the occupation forces. In the West Bank, they think that they are going by this crackdown. They are destroying or they are uprooting the resistance and killing the whole freedom fighters. But indeed, by keeping oppressing the Palestinians in the West Bank, of course the resistance will grow up more and more, by the time. And indeed, this time, actually, when we have the Israeli new extremist government, actually they act in a very savage way, in a very, brutality way. Indeed, they are just kill the people, and they think that they are above the law. And nobody, because nobody held them accountability for their crimes and their genocide and their oppression against the Palestinian people.
Israeli forces have opened fire on a Palestinian woman near the settlement of Male Adumim, southeast of occupied Al-Quds. According to eyewitnesses, the woman was shot in the leg while she was approaching the troopers. She has been taken into custody for an alleged stabbing attempt. Reports say that the woman is in moderate condition, but her identity remains unknown. The Israeli regime has intensified crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territories following the formation of a far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. More than 60 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone since the turn of the year. Hundreds of Palestinians have also been languishing in Israeli jails for years without any charge or trial. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says nothing can legitimize Saudi Arabia's heinous crimes in Yemen. Abdul Malik al-Houthi says that the Saudi war on Yemen was the biggest conflict ever inflicted on his country. Houthi blamed Riyadh and its Western and Arab allies for the suffering of the Yemeni nation through the prolonged military aggression and blockade. He also called on foreign forces, including those of the United States and Britain, to leave Yemen and stop supporting Saudi Arabia in the war. Houthi says apparently Washington seeks to stop mediation between Yemen and Saudi Arabia in Oman, since the U.S. has a great advantage in the continuation of the war. Houthi made the remarks during a speech on the anniversary of the Saudi assassination of Yemen's President Salah al-Samad in 2018. The Yemeni government has strongly condemned what it calls the United Nations' insidious plans to divide Yemen and the rest of the Middle East into smaller states subservient to Western imperialism. Youssef Mari reports.
The UN Special Envoy to Yemen, Haines Grunberg, has been busy this week meeting with Yemeni and UAE officials in the Emirates. The UN Envoy's office posted a tweet stating that the latest efforts are aimed at improving Yemen's living conditions and securing longer-term peace, security, and development. Given the UN's track record in Yemen, it behooves one to raise some questions about what security, peace, and development look like through the political lens of the United Nations. I visited Mohammed al-Nu'aymi, a member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, to hear his take on the UN's progress in establishing security, lasting peace, and development in Yemen.
The United Nations efforts and strategies in most of the nations they have been involved in have focused on two main efforts. The first effort is gathering intelligence for Western nations because it is the West who controls the UN. The second effort is to pave the way for Western states to implement their political agenda. For example, in Yemen, they want to control the country's political affairs and geography. If they are unable to achieve this, their second option is to divide Yemen.
Al-Nu'aymi also said the UN and its partners' political ambitions are not limited to Yemen. Abdel Khalik Qobar, a Yemeni judge I spoke with, said cases of war crimes should be filed against members of the United Nations, who he says are actively engaged in covering up the crimes against humanity perpetuated on Yemenis. In his televised speech last week, leader of Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, called on the Yemeni people to be prepared for war in case peaceful efforts fail to bring about the Yemeni people's demands. The UN claims to be engaged in peaceful efforts to bring an end to the conflict in Yemen. However, according to Ansarullah officials, the UN body has been engaged in efforts to divide countries in the region. Officials we spoke with believe this is part of a greater plan which aims to prevent the Muslim world from uniting against Western imperialism. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
China says its relations with Russia have stood strong through complex and grave international situations, with both countries expressing willingness to promote a multipolar world.
The current international situation is complex and grave, but China-Russia relations have stood the test of the international situation and are as mature, resilient, and stable as Mount Tai. The China-Russia Comprehensive Strategic Partnership of Coordination never targets any third party, nor will it be affected or coerced by any third party.
Wen Bin made these comments during a press briefing on the second day of a visit by the foreign policy adviser of Wang Yi to Moscow. He said China and Russia will oppose what he called unilateral and bullying actions in any form. The spokesman said the two sides have agreed to continue strengthening coordination within the UN and other international mechanisms and practice true multilateralism. The Chinese official said Beijing and Moscow will step up cooperation and work more to improve global governance. Poland has urged Western European countries to, quote, be quick and generous in sending weapons to Ukraine. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki understands that the urgency of delivering support to Kiev is imminent. He said that Europe could not allow Ukraine to be defeated in the war with Russia. Meanwhile, Finland's defense ministry says it will be sending 3 Leopard tanks to Ukraine, amounting to 160 million euros. And the U.S. Treasury Secretary has called for more financial support for Ukraine. She said Washington has prepared $10 billion in economic assistance, adding to its previous aid of $46 billion. In a joint statement, G7 finance ministers also said that they had increased financial aid for Ukraine in the current year.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
U.S. detention centers are usually notorious for their lack of sanitation, medical neglect, and use of solitary confinement. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, earlier this month, over 85 people incarcerated at Northwest Detention Center NWDC in Tacoma, Washington, went on a five-day hunger strike to protest worsening living conditions. According to advocates, the strike started on February 1st when guards accused detainees of having some materials during an inspection. When detainees across units joined in protest, Immigration and Customs Enforcement (ICE) officers retaliated by tear gassing inmates in Unit F4 and using smoke bombs and pepper spray on others. The strikers demanded an end to this inhumane treatment, as well as access to better medical care and COVID-19 preventative measures, timely and warm food service, clean bedding and attire, lower telecommunications and commissary prices, among other basic necessities. Detainees ended the strike on February 6th after ICE officials promised to meet their demands. Though many say their food is still arriving late and other conditions have yet to be met. La Resistencia, a grassroots organization in Washington state led by undocumented people in solidarity with detainees at NWDC, is fighting to close the facility and end all detentions and deportations. Jose Hernandez, who was on hunger strike, told organizers with La Resistencia that he was fighting for medical attention and the rights of everyone detained at the facility. Hernandez told organizers, "I won't stop until I see results. This isn't just about me, it is about everyone." According to a statement from an ICE spokesperson, upon discovery of an inmate possessing a comb with razor blades used to cut her, the non-citizens involved refused to follow orders and became non-compliant. After careful consideration, ERO, Enforcement and Removal Operations, authorized non-lethal use of force, following applicable guidelines to ensure the safety of all people in facility, including non-citizens and staff. Once the incident was resolved, all detainees were evaluated by on-site medical staff and cleared with no injuries. Medical staff confirmed there were no detainees with suicidal identification. Detainees, however, tell another story. One protester told La Resistencia that the officers treated them poorly and would pepper spray inmates indiscriminately, including those who were sick. The protester to La Resistencia organizer said, "They don't care about us, and it isn't right. What they're saying in the news are lies. Nobody was resisting them. We are just trying to be peaceful." Another detainee told La Resistencia that even though their unit was not directly tear gassed, they could still smell the fumes. "Our unit is directly above F4 and is connected to the same ventilation system," they said, adding, "As a result, we were breathing in these gases for about 3 hours. The GEO guard would not call for help, and we were suffocating, begging for help, while the guard just told us to deal with it. I actually called the Federal Public Defender's office and begged the receptionist to call the fire department for about 5 minutes. One of the detainees started kicking and clawing at the door, hysterically trying to get out to get fresh air. Owned by the private prison corporation GEO Group, NWDC is notorious for its mistreatment of inmates, lack of sanitation, medical neglect, and overuse of solitary confinement. According to a report by the University of Washington Center for Human Rights, the NWDC has weaponized solitary confinement against prison organizers and those facing mental health issues. According to IC data, the facility also detains people longer, on average, in solitary confinement than any other dedicated ICE facility in the nation. Chad Faulkner, an Australian national and suicide risk detainee, was forcibly held in solitary confinement at NWDC on January 29th. During a phone interview, Faulkner told Prism that he asked his officer to let him take a shower and was dragged to solitary confinement instead, injuring his limbs in the process. Faulkner said, "I told them, I'm not supposed to be down there. I'm on a mental health observation." According to Faulkner, the officer forcibly held him down despite Faulkner's pleas to call their supervisor. Faulkner said he was scratched, bruised, and had cuts all over his hands. Faulkner said, "I started crying. I was crying, screaming, telling them to stop, and they didn't stop." This was not the first time detainees like Faulkner experienced abuse at the hands of NWDC authorities. On December 5, 2022, Faulkner went on hunger strike to protest malnourishment, harassment, and having his belongings rummaged through without consent. Before him, on May 13, 2022, 13 detainees also went on hunger strike to protest inhuman conditions at the facility. Similar to the recent hunger strike this month, the strikers were threatened with pepper spray before being placed in solitary confinement. This is nothing but a business for both GEO and ICE. They both benefit from having people in detention, and they will do anything necessary to not only keep their business running, but also to keep this a secret prison, said La Resistencia co-founder Mauro Mora Villa Pando, adding, "They abuse people and they don't want anybody to know." Faulkner has been awaiting deportation at NWDC since October 20th, 2022, when his case was finalized. Faulkner said, "I would love to be free. I would love to be free to go right back to my mom. She needs me." According to Hill, advocates say conditions at U.S. immigration detention centers are getting worse, even after years of investigations, calls to action, and pledges to improve the civilian incarceration system. Early in his tenure, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas ordered two detention centers shuttered, and he has since closed a handful more. Mayorkas said in a memo to Immigration and Customs Enforcement IC Acting Director Ty Johnson in March of 2021, "Allow me to state one foundational principle. We will not tolerate the mistreatment of individuals in civil immigration detention or substandard conditions of detention." Even as Biden administration officials have vowed to reduce immigration detention, multiple organizations, including the American Civil Liberties Union and the American Immigration Lawyers Association, have consistently highlighted the flaws in the U.S. system. Still, ICE and private detention center operators such as Core Civic and GEO Group have been dogged by consistent reports of abuse, neglect, and mismanagement across U.S.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Shaykh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. This may have been one of the most important subjects that we have discussed. How to awaken the heart. When I was growing up, I wasn't really growing up, I was grown up, but I was like in my maybe early 20s. I had a very close, we had a very close Christian friend, you know. I met this guy by chance. I was the vice chairman of the mosque, you know, that's what I did. I did that work before, you know. I'm on both sides of the fence, alhamdulillah, you know. But I answered the phone one day and it was this guy who was calling from a Christian university. They wanted to come and bring their students. So I said, yeah, let's get together. We can come to our mosque. It was the Prophet Khushali. And so he came and then we had a long-standing friendship that developed. And he told me one day randomly, he says, Ja'far, does God speak to you? Right? And I said, what do you mean? He said, I talk to God all the time. And I feel that God answers me. He's like, I get answers from God. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I've ever spoken to God like that. You know, we read du'as, we read bunch of du'as, right? But how many of those du'as that we read do we even understand, first of all? That's number one. And number two, how many of those du'as that we recite are just done customarily, just because I'm doing it now. I've memorized it and I just do it. There's one thing to speak to God in that way. There's something else altogether to talk to God, right? To confess to Him, to ask Him for guidance, to apologize for mistakes that I've made. Utilizing the language of the Ahlul Bayt, but also utilizing my own way of communication to Him. And so I thought, you know, that I don't doubt that God was speaking to him. Because, you know, everyone is God's creation. It's not that God says, well, you're not Shia, I don't speak to you. No, it doesn't work that way. God will guide people. God will help people. Allah is the most merciful. Yeah, His mercy doesn't just extend to us, it extends to all, right? This is the dua we recite in Rajab, right? Ya man yu'ti man sa'ala, ya man yu'ti man lam yas'alhu wa man lam ya'arifu. This is what makes God so beautiful, yeah? That anyone who wants can feel that God is giving them personal attention. And so I thought, that, you know, how is it possible that I, who am confident in my belief, that God wouldn't speak to me? And so from that day, I would start a conversation with God. And I think we should do that, you know, we should do that. And I feel that when the purity is there, even to a certain extent, we will really get beautiful guidance from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that will help us in all avenues of life. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Salli ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. You know, we talked about, if you look at the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, you find that they went through a lot of difficulties, yeah? All of them, 1 through 11 and 12 in Ghaybah is continuously going through difficulty. But even the Prophet and Sayyidah went through extreme difficulty. Poverty, loss of life, all of these different balas that God talks about that a human being can go through, they all went through that. And the result of that is that they were strong in faith. Strong in faith, right? Some of our ancestors, Right? I can talk about my family, like my grandfather or great-grandfather. When you hear their stories, abject poverty they grew up in. Yeah, poverty, where they may not even have had meals. They struggled, right? When I hear stories about my family, my parents, for example, my dad had 10 siblings in a two-bedroom house. Their grandfather died, and so there was the mom and 10 kids from older to younger. SubhanAllah, all living like that, right? But their faith was unshakable. Yeah, unshakable. Right? Like I often think that if I were to tell them, like, today we need proofs to the existence of God, like prove to me God. Like if I went to my grandma and I was like, Daddy, what's the proof that God exists? She would laugh at me. She's like, I know He exists, right? And she felt it. And you know, like this idea that difficulties create strong people is something really interesting. Someone had forwarded me a clip and I think it's very beautiful. It says, you know, that difficulties create strong people. Yeah, and it's true. Difficulties will create tough people. Now we're talking about tough from the perspective of God, to be strong in faith. But difficulties, if we have that faith to begin with, will create even stronger faith. And so difficulties will create strong people. Strong people will create even stronger people. Really strong people will create weak people. Yeah, because they will not rely on what they need to do anymore. Everything is provided for them. Right? If you just look at it from a very materialistic perspective, somebody who didn't have much will work very hard to get something. And then they will pass on that work ethic to their next generation, so they work really hard to get something. Now that generation has already provided everything to the third generation. They don't have to work hard anymore. And so they are created weak, right? And I think we're on that phase now. You know, and if you think about it from that perspective, like our parents came here, or we came here, they worked very hard, and they passed that on to us. And then we worked hard, and now our kids are living lush and comfortable lives, yeah? In their own capacity. They got gadgets, they got laptops, they got internet, and they're turning out to be a bit soft, yeah? Right? The smallest thing will upset them, smallest thing will make them lose their patience, smallest thing will irritate them. Why does that happen, right? And that happens because we provided everything for them. I think what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying, that look, feel hunger from time to time. Feel that pain, because that pain will humble you. It will make you tough. It will remind you of the sadness of others, right? This is what one of the wisdoms of fasting is, right? It reminds you of the hunger of others. And so this husnul da'im, I think if you bring it back to the context of the weakness that sometimes yields from difficulty or from success rather, will help us supplement that which is missing to raise us so that we don't become soft individuals. Do you understand me or no? Yeah? This is something I've been thinking about a lot, yeah? This is something I've really been thinking about, because we're not going to tell our kids like, well, I'm not giving you anything anymore. That's not going to create toughness. Toughness is when you feel the toughness, when you feel hardship, right? But hunger helps with that, subhanAllah. Right? And so alhamdulillah, Allah makes us fast so that we can humble ourselves. But from time to time, one of the things that you and I need to do is feel hunger. Right? We don't have to eat between every meal, for example. Eat the three meals. Allah has told us to eat, right? But maybe not eat as much, or maybe skip a meal sometimes. Or maybe not snack in between, so that when it's the meal time, I am hungry. However it is, you got to take your whole health into consideration, yeah? I don't want you to get sick and then blame me, okay? But take your own health into consideration. But it's important that time to time, we feel it. And this is why we have so many mustahab fasts, right? That we can do these mustahab fasts that will assist us in this feeling of hunger.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adim Alimun Halim حاكم متين.
قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Protests about pay and working conditions in both France and the United Kingdom have paralysed both nations. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. Trade Union of Junior Doctors in England said on Monday, 20th of February, that tens of thousands of doctors have voted for strike action next month, adding to a series of walkouts by nurses and ambulance workers, putting pressure on an already strained healthcare system. The British Medical Association, the BMA, which represents some 45,000 junior doctors in England, said 98% of those taking part in the ballot had voted in favour of strike action, adding that they will stage a 72-hour walkout next month. The British Medical Association, BMA, did not give a date for the strike. Junior doctors agreed in 2019 to an annual 2% pay rise as part of a four-year deal, but they say that is now inadequate in light of the much higher inflation rate today. The British Medical Association said this vote shows without a shadow of a doubt the strength of feeling among most of England's junior doctors. We are frustrated, in despair and angry, and we have voted in our thousands. The British Medical Association describes junior doctors as those who are qualified in clinical training and have up to 8 years' experience working as a hospital doctor or up to 3 years in general practice. They work under the supervision of a senior doctor. Britain's Health Minister Steve Barclay called the vote deeply disappointing. Steve Barclay said in a statement, "I've met with the British Medical Association and other medical unions to discuss what is fair and affordable, as well as wider concerns around conditions and workload. I want to continue discussing how we can make the National Health Service, the NHS, a better place to work for all." According to a recent survey, the British Medical Association says junior doctors have suffered a more than 25% real-term pay cut since 2008, leaving many demoralised and 4 in 10 wanting to leave the profession. Another trade union for doctors, the Hospital Consultants and Specialists Association, said its junior doctor members had also voted to carry out strike action in a separate ballot. That strike on 15th of March involves less than 1,000 staff. The strikes will heap more pressure on Britain's state-funded National Health Service, which is already stretched by staff shortages and record backlogs, and is now experiencing waves of disruptive strike action by healthcare workers. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's government has argued that higher pay rises would only cause more inflation and interest rates and mortgage rates to go up further. More than 10,000 ambulance drivers went on strike on Monday, 20th of February, while the nursing trade union recently announced a fresh 48-hour strike action from 1st of March. The website of Economic Times has also covered this story and tells us more. Tens of thousands of nurses and ambulance drivers across Britain launched a walkout over low pay and working conditions, marking the biggest ever strike action in the history of the National Health Service. The strike by healthcare workers took place on Monday, 20th of February, involving both nursing staff and ambulance workers, and have been striking separately on and off since late last year. The strike action was the most disruptive so far in an already strained healthcare system. Britain is facing a wave of industrial action amid the highest inflation rate and worst cost of living crisis in generations, with strikes crippling public services such as the rail network, postal service, airports and schools. In December, nurses went on strike for the first time in more than a century. Healthcare workers are demanding a pay rise that reflects the worst inflation in Britain in the past four decades, while the government says it cannot afford high increases that match the soaring inflation rate. And even if it could, such monetary increases would further fuel inflation. Britain's Transport Minister Grant Shapps has voiced concern the strikes would put lives at risk, citing a lack of cooperation between the backup services, such as the Army, and those workers who are on strike. Sharon Graham, leader of the Unite Union, said on Sunday, 19th of February, she wanted Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to come to the negotiating table, charging the government with lying about ambulance workers. Sharon Graham said, "This government is putting lives at risk." Meanwhile, thousands of ambulance workers represented by the GMB and Unite trade unions launched strike action on Monday in their own pay dispute. Both unions have announced several more days of industrial action. In Wales, nurses and some ambulance workers have called off strikes planned for Monday as they review pay offers from the Welsh Government. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has already called for the bold and radical actions to end the crisis across the National Health Service. Meanwhile, a leading business company has revealed that more than 70% of UK households fear they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first 6 months of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. A group of charities have said one in four households regularly runs out of money for essentials, and voters do not believe the government is doing enough to help British families. A survey found nearly 40% of people end the month with no money left, while 24% run out of money for essentials either most months or most days. The assessment by the Together Through This Crisis initiative, whose members are Save the Children, Shelter, Turn to Us, Little Village and 38 Degrees, adds to the growing welter of indicators that persistent double-digit inflation and soaring energy bills are having a widespread impact on British households and may do so at the ballot box. The Office for National Statistics, the ONS, released figures on Monday, 20th of February, showing that more than half of renters would not be able to afford an unexpected £850 bill, prompting calls for ministers to unfreeze housing benefit, which is stuck at 2020 levels. Macmillan Cancer Support separately warned that cancer patients were resorting to selling possessions and using loan sharks to make ends meet. In findings it described as heartbreaking, the charity said a third of patients had been buying or eating less food, and 22% had been spending more time in bed to stay warm. While there had been a jump in the number of calls to its helpline about financial issues. The research by the frontline charity signals the widening political risk of the cost of living crisis. According to the survey by Together Through This Crisis, even among the 10 most affluent constituencies in the United Kingdom, 19% of people said they found themselves unable to pay for basic items such as food and energy bills by the end of most months. Matthew McGregor, the chief executive of the charity 38 Degrees, a charity that organises campaigning petitions, said, "This polling paints a bleak picture of the crisis unfolding across the country. Families running out of money to put food on the table and keep kids warm is rapidly becoming our new normal." Overall, 6% of the British people told the charity survey they could not pay for essentials most days, rising to 11% in the most deprived areas of Britain. 67% said the British government was not doing enough to address the cost of living crisis.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of elegists, eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamu alayha. You need to be well aware of what is taking place in the world and what is happening inside the country. For example, consider recent events. I would like to say something about the recent events in Iran. In recent events, the enemy's plot was comprehensive, but their calculations were wrong. As a person who views, monitors, and understands these issues, in my heart, I thought, how well has the enemy engineered this? It was well engineered. They had prepared everything in the right places and in the right amounts. So why didn't they succeed? Because one of the enemy's bases, the calculations it had made, was wrong. Yes, the things they did were all very important and effective, and they do have an impact in certain countries. However, they were unsuccessful here. This is because the calculations they had made about Islamic Iran were wrong.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I will give two or three examples of the enemy's miscalculations. I have briefly mentioned some of these in my previous talks. They imagined that because of the economic problems that exist, the Iranian nation would cooperate with the enemy's plots of subversion or regime change and separatism. This is a calculation. Their calculation was wrong. They imagined that by using foul language and insults, they would be able to take the country's officials out of the picture and make them assume a passive role. Some people become passive when they hear foul language and insults. Their calculation was wrong. They thought they could create differences of opinions among the country's high-level officials by using temptations and creating commotions. They hoped that one side would say, "Let's do such and such a thing," and the other side would say, "No." They wanted to sow discord. This is a problem that exists in the U.S. It exists in the Zionist regime. It exists in some other countries too. These differences prevent them from getting big things done. They imagined they could create such differences. This was part of their calculations, but this calculation was wrong. They imagined that by using the petrodollars of a mercenary country of the U.S., they could weaken the Islamic Republic's determination.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.